Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we'll tell you all about why the Rolling Stone publication of bands and rankings and songs is for the birds. I'm very animated. Also, lots of discussion and clarity on electric cars and just how good are they for the environment. A very interesting article for you. We'll do that right after this.
Hey, everyone, it's Megyn Kelly. I wanted to tell you about my free audio podcast, The Megyn Kelly Show, your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations. Get the real news and straight talk and maybe the occasional F-bomb only when it's needed. Every weekday, the truth about the news, the media, and more from an insider's perspective. You can follow the show and never miss a moment. You will get no BS, no agenda, and no fear. Follow The Megyn Kelly Show on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast for free. And we look forward to having you.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, actor Sean Weiss and Natanya Ross. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, he got stitches, but never snitches, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, we're going to demand it. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
My mind is willing, but the dong is weak.
Yeah, I got my stitches out yesterday.
Now what does it look like? Let's see. Okay.
Looks like it's a zigzaggy.
Looks like
scar.
A Sharpie instead of.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable,
thread.
But I actually started thinking about it. You know, I was able to sit there and nice lady had to cut out like 100 stitches and pull them all out one at a time with
the
tweezers.
Do the local anesthetic? They'll spray or
not
something?
Not for pulling out.
No, but it's still, there were some trouble spots.
A lot of nerves in the hand.
It did sting a bit, a time or two, which she would always say sorry for. And I've realized doctors do this, some chiropractors, you know, they'll go, sorry, yeah. I know this thing. All right, yeah. I know, sorry, I know this. And I appreciate it. From a sort of humanistic quality, but I had to tell her, "You're doing your job.
Yeah, you're not a sadist.
I get what you're doing. You're doing it as carefully as you can do it, and you do not have to apologize if something stings.
Yeah.
My hand was cut open 2 weeks ago. This comes with the territory.
Right.
So, but also, versus it is probably better to have stitches taken out of your ass." Because when they're taken out of your hand, you just turn your hand over and put it on the table, and then you just sit there and watch them do it, and it looks like a mess. If it's the ass, you can just bend over the table and read a magazine.
Sure. Get some tweeting done.
Under the boobs, let me tell you, I can't see shit.
No.
Because they're like up where they're going to be, and they had to, so I had some open wounds, which they knew would happen, because it's basically...
Don't all you broads have an open
Here's the deal. When your boobs get that big, the skin stretches.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're sewing you back up, it's basically like sewing a paper napkin. You know what I mean? So I have some, so I'm dealing with them now, but she sutured them, just stitched me, did a little whip stitch like I would darn a sock. It hurts. It sure does.
You doing some sock darning these days?
I do darn. I darn a lot of things.
If one was to darn a sock.
I like to homestead.
Is everything so cheap now that there's no more mending going on? Like, I feel like I grew up where people were cut, you know, you would buy a pair of jeans for your kid that was three sizes too long because you knew there was going to be some growth spurt. And then you'd hem them up and then you'd unhem them and pull them down. And at some point, I don't know when this became in vogue, but at some point, they would iron on patches on your knees.
Yep.
Once you wore out the knees, they'd get a patch and they'd iron those on. I don't know. Is everything too cheap now or kids too fat?
Oh,
because you used
both.
To be able to, used to just kind of grow up.
Yeah,
not,
now you're going
now
out.
We're growing out, you know?
That's,
and it was like your waist was a 28 and the inseam was, 26, and then at some point your waist would be a 28 and your inseam would be a 28, and then your waist would be a 28 and your inseam would be a 31.
Right.
And they would just keep letting more out of your leg. But I feel now they got to let out of your gut now. And
you're
so
right.
You can't really let it out of the gut,
no.
So we got to throw the pants away.
Yeah. In the 80s, I don't know if your mom did this, Brian, but my mom didn't do the whip stitch. There was a product called Stitch Witchery, which was basically just like...
I had a real mom.
She did a lot of sewing of nightgowns and recital costumes, but when it came to hemming, it's just like this like strip of glue that you iron on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think Ronco or Popeil.
Yeah, she was a big Ronco supporter.
Had like a weird powder that you could sprinkle on and then iron it.
That I buy as well.
And it would work as a cuff. See if there's any Ronco sewing. And also they... Ronco had a mini sewing, handheld mini sewing machine,
too.
It
looked like a hole puncher, kind
of. Yeah, my mom didn't do a lot of sewing.
Really?
My dad didn't do a whole lot of darning.
What?
He didn't really give a darning about anything.
And he didn't need Ronco's spray-on hair because he had black hair.
That's right. Spray-on hair was called top coverage.
Oh, God.
And it wouldn't come off an upholstery. That was always my...
That was a selling point.
Just let your soul.
I have these weird little comedic flashbacks of being 9 years old and hearing the commercial for top coverage. It won't come off an upholstery, and picture someone coming over for dinner party on a white linen couch and leaving a big black hash mark on the top of the sofa.
Right, from their hair.
Sofa?
Top coverage was you just spray it on that bald spot and you just comb that shit right over the top.
I have it on good authority that my dad used that in the early 80s on TV. We had the food dehydrator Ronco. We still have lots of Ronco products.
Wow.
It's an interesting glimpse into a family, the multiple Ronco items.
We didn't have the pocket fisherman.
Yeah, one suggests a kind of can-do attitude. The other's like loser, poor as fuck folks.
Well, there's some crossover.
There's some crossover. So I like where your head is at when you go, we're going to get this stuff, we're going to solve these problems, and we're going to save some money. So we didn't, we had jeans with the iron-ons. I remember another vivid memory of, speaking of sewing for some reason, my buddy Ray's mom, Irene, who was also kind of crazy and spoke with a German accent, had a big laugh. One time I went over to their apartment when I was in like the seventh grade, and she held up pantyhose, just women's pantyhose. Mm-hmm. But she'd sewn a dick slot onto the middle of it, and she went, pantyhose for men, and just started laughing maniacally. And I remember like being
good stuff.
12, kind of going like, I feel weird. This feels like I've entered into some realm that I shouldn't be in.
Now I must acknowledge.
The rite of passage.
But she just laughed and laughed and laughed. And then I thought to myself, I kind of am envious of those people who can look at something simple like that and be endlessly
amused
by it. But it also probably means you'll have a job at the Far East Terrace cocktailing well into your 60s.
Specific.
For example.
Yeah. For example.
To answer your question from earlier, if Christy is any example, and Gina, I don't know if you do this, she gets shoes repaired once they, because those are expensive items. They're actually going to replace those. Like once the sole or the heel or whatever gets worn out, popped off, whatever.
And you're supposed to, shoes and expensive handbags. I've never been into like the counterfeit handbag. If I'm getting one, I'm getting a nice one. That shit needs to go to the leather repair shop.
Ronco made, someone made the powder that you ironed on, but they made the mini, I don't think my stepmom, I don't think any woman in my family possessed a sewing machine.
Really? Ours came with the table.
It can't be
separated from the table.
Did it wheel? Ours wheeled.
Yeah.
It shows a kind of can-do-ness that I like. Although, as I said, when I was at Walter Reed Junior High, I did take a sewing class for some, God knows, some reason.
We all did.
Reason.
Didn't you, Brian?
Yeah, in middle school, actually, as part of our elective.
Very hard to thread a bobbin. I hate sewing. Because I had to take it for costume shop in college. I am not, that is not where I shine. I'd rather hand sew.
On a completely separate note.
Oh, we're done talking about sewing?
Yes. I was thinking about this. I don't even know where I was, but I thought to myself, shouldn't honey be more expensive? Like,
these are the kind of thoughts we're here for.
The honey, first off, I feel like a medium-sized thing of honey would last me 3 years.
And it never goes bad.
Only food that has no expiration.
Yeah.
It never goes bad, and it lasts for a long time. I haven't been honey shopping in a while, but it's probably $4. And
not at the farmer's market, it's like 15.
Well, if you want to go to the farmer's market.
You got the one of the bear.
The bear's like $3.
And then you had to think about the process of what it takes to get that honey and make that honey and get it into that jar. Yeah, if I was selling honey, I'd want like $1,400 for one of the it took for me to go to the hive.
For them to make it.
Yes, and then to go extract it and whatever purification process. You guys ever, I went once with Tom Johnson, the guy who was a carpenter who I used to work with. He took me once to go capture a queen bee that had flown away from the hive.
Okay.
How would you even know?
Because all the other bees swarm the queen once they fly away and like land on a branch. And then it just becomes this huge ball of bees. There's no hive.
Kids toy.
There's just a pile of bees.
Okay.
It's probably how the guys who do the beard of bees, which was a thing. That was a thing when I was growing up. Maybe they put some pheromone or something on their chin.
Yeah, and then stick a queen under the imperial.
Yeah, I mean you couldn't train a bunch of bees to just hang from your chin. Mm. You'd have to. I mean, try to figure out how the beard of bees guys does it. I've ruled out training bees.
Okay.
This guy puts something on his chin, and the next thing you know, he has 200,000 bees hanging from his chin,
cool,
like a beard. But right, this is what happened. This is price of raw honey, $5.50 to $6.50 per pound wholesale.
Wow, that's a steal. Per pound?
For what you have to do for it.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel the same way about hot sauce. That little shaker thing.
Yeah.
That thing will last me a year and a half. It's $1.98. Yeah. Feels too cheap when you figure out, and I don't know where the profit is.
Yeah, I mean, have to talk to Dexter. Where's the profit?
I get toilet paper and all the things you just cycle through.
Right.
And then I get the big durable goods, like, oh, he's just bought himself a Lexus, and that's $72,000. I don't get the super cheap stuff that sits around for a year at your home.
That, like honey, doesn't seem that easy to procure.
Mm. Yes,
like,
I agree.
It's very popular in L.A. and even in New York rooftops to be a hometown beekeeper.
Right.
Like, I have friends that do it, and I don't get it. I don't get the benefit.
I think it's like pigeons or even sometimes herb gardens on the roof. I think it's like a process.
A chicken coop.
Yeah.
It's a way. It's also a way to smoke somewhere where the old lady's talking about, I'm going up to the roof.
Tending
to the bees. I'll be back in 2 days. Yeah, we have a clip of how to get a bee beard.
Oh, good.
This guy's going to explain it to you.
Bee bearding. The practice of covering one's face, or in some cases, the entire body.
Oh my God.
Wow. Sarcophagus.
It dates back to the early 1800s.
Guy's got a beard.
Unless you know what you're doing, you should never, ever try this at home. But if you're just curious about how it works, here's how. Step one. Bee bearders find a gentle, well-fed, well-populated colony. It takes around 10,000 bees to make a lush, full-bodied beard. Step two. The queen bee is removed and placed in a box.
There you go.
Step three. The savvy bee bearder ensures that they have a way to breathe once the swarm descends. Step four. The box is strapped to the bee bearder's chin. The queen's pheromones will attract
Some
bee bearders have developed a technique that simply uses a liquid containing queen bee pheromones instead.
Thank you,
Mike. You're going to put small droplets of this on
the
jumpsuit.
Where's the swimming pool? So the guy puts drops of pheromone all over himself.
The queen is returned to the hive, and the beard can simply be shaken off. Although bees are gentle insects, unless they feel threatened, there's a risk of being stung for even an experienced bee beater. So leave it to the experts to perform this unbelievable trick.
Leave it to the experts. You just gave me a five-step education on how to do it.
Ooh, the thriller bees.
The guy is covered with bees and playing. It could be Woody Allen. We don't know. Yeah. Cannot see the man's face. So you get the pheromone going.
You're right.
Once you put that. So once the bee over Tom Johnson's dad's property, who raised some bees, you know, it's kind of funny. I was thinking about it. I used to work for Tom. Tom worked in, and he had his own industrial cabinet shop down in Chatsworth somewhere. But Tom would pay me $9 an hour. $10 an hour.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know what it was. But also, and I've been guilty of this too. Sometimes you get a guy and you're just paying him $10 an hour. And, you know, you're there ostensibly to build cabinets, but you can go, come on, we're going to my dad's house and catching bees. And you're on the clock. Yeah. You know, you're just going to get bees, you know. Or sometimes we, on a rare occasion, just go to the lake. Or just do something that he wanted to do. It's like you're renting a friend. And when you got to the lake, I was the one who had to unload the shit.
Sure.
Whatever. But it was all. So we went to his dad's property somewhere in Chatsworth. The queen had flown the nest, landed on a branch, and then all the other bees, like the beard of bees, swarmed around and landed on the queen. And then you have to capture the queen so you can capture the colony, so you can then put the colony in one of those white wood boxes so you can get more honey.
But how the hell do you dig out the queen?
You take the whole group.
Oh, wow.
So you take the queen and whoever's landed on the queen, the 10,000 bearded bees, and they just hang like a beehive, but there's no hive. It's just bees.
Hanging to each other.
And then you like get up there on a ladder and you smoke them. You hit them with the smoke.
Right. That pacifies them or something.
Yeah, makes them docile. And then you got to get them up there with like a burlap sack.
Jesus.
And all I did was stand and hold the ladder. But I had one rogue bee just chase me like a Woody Woodpecker cartoon, like bouncing off the back of my head.
Like an
every
arrow.
20 feet, like an arrow while I was just running and screaming through the Chatsworth wilderness. Because somehow, like all animals, the bees know the ones that don't have fear and are there to do a job versus the greenhorns from North Hollywood that are scared to be there and they zero right in on your cowardly ass. All right. So I was sitting around last night and I was eating dinner with Sonny. And Sonny's new thing is I think he likes to upset me by bringing up things that he knows will upset me. And he then started saying, I was looking at the Rolling Stones top 500 best bands or best songs of all time. And got the Velvet Underground on there. Lou Reed.
Oh, Rolling Stone magazine. Sorry. I bet the band Rolling Stone.
Confusing.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Lou Reed is on there.
He must know by now that you're not a hitter because you wouldn't bring this up to a volatile father.
And the Velvet, I guess Lou.
He just has stitches removed.
Lou Reed was with the Velvet Underground. Emmy knows for a period of time and then struck out on his own.
As far as I know, I watched the Lou Reed documentary hoping to learn more about why this man is so beloved. I was mostly annoyed.
Founder of the Velvet Underground. All right, so Lou Reed can't really play an instrument or sing or anything, but it's all about affectation and wearing cop sunglasses and smoking cigarettes.
You look very cool.
So I will play you what is Lou Reed's hit that the Rolling Stone magazine thought should be number 81 out of 500, and then you guys will get upset.
Lexington, 125, feel sick and dirty, more dead than
right. This is every Lou Reed song. A super simple, kind of nothing. Well, he sort of half talks, sings. He doesn't really sing because he can't sing. And then we have to pretend like the Velvet Underground is something right. special when they're not. And Lou Reed is something special. And Rolling Stone has to pretend like they're something. So that's 81. And you go, well, that's down the list. But...
Was there a hook?
What song was that?
No, it's just two chords. It's called I'm Waiting for My Man. Lou Reed famously once said, one chord, cool. Two chords, okay. Three chords, that's fucking jazz.
Yeah. All right. So says the guy, Lou Reed, who has no chords in him. All right. Let me anger Brian over here.
Oh, God.
Because below 81.
Okay. I can only imagine the list of Beatles
let's
songs.
Let's have that song playing while we talk. Okay. Below that song, by the way, do you know somebody who could not create this song?
Feels put together parts of other songs.
Yeah.
Like, this is not hard to create.
Yeah, with open tuning, you can do it with one finger.
All right. Under that song, lesser than that song.
Don't do this.
Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine.
That's not even my favorite Guns N' Roses song, and that's a crime.
Sweet Child of Mine is one. Gina.
Yeah.
Under 81 at 94. Mm-hmm. I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston.
This is bullshit.
Sorry, Brian, but coming in 14 slots lesser than that song.
It's got a ways to go.
Little band called Oasis.
Don't do this.
Called Wonderwall.
Don't, no.
Wonderwall. They get it right.
That is a timeless
right.
classic.
Also, Brian, the Beatles, In My Life.
Sure, okay. Yeah, of course. That melodic, ditty.
Also, ooh. I'm angry now. You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette at 103.
This is insulting.
Oh, I Want You Back by the Jackson 5 is way
not
below
as good.
That.
Not as good as this?
At 105, Life on Mars by David Bowie. Sympathy for the Devil at 106.
Wow.
See, the problem is it's the 500 greatest songs of all time. So every song on this list is going to be perennial all-star. And then...
The order there's just seems this. Scattershot.
Was there one hipster asshole who rated this number one of all time that screwed up the ratings?
Because
they take, 25 people, making their lists or whatever.
Sonny was telling me, but I haven't been able to verify it, that Velvet Under... This is the 81st song of all time, but Velvet Underground was like number 18 or 19 in bands of all time. Like,
wow.
14 slots above The Who.
Sure.
Hey Jude by the Beatles, 89.
Oh, wow.
I'm not even sure what that is.
Tumbling Dice by the Rolling Stones, 86. Let's Stay Together by Al Green at 84. Also, let's see. Good Golly, Miss Molly, Little Richard's, 92. Let's see. I'll still look down. Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
Wow.
99. Blown in the Wind by Bob Dylan, 100.
These have all not held up like Lou Reed's song.
That's true.
Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones at 106. All right, so now
some
the list is now
songs.
Null and void, yeah. Right? This is the song that's better. It's just the song. It's not who looks the coolest.
Dawson, is this a loop or is this the actual song playing?
This is the actual song playing.
I thought he was. It is? He's fucking with us.
This is the song. It's not looped.
And no one's ever heard this song on the radio because it's not worth playing on the radio.
There's two famous Lou Reed songs, and neither of them are... Okay.
My favorite Lou Reed song... I like one Lou Reed song a lot, and it's called Dirty Boulevard.
Oh.
That one's pretty cool.
Sorry, but it'll still sound like shit. Yeah, Rolling Stone has him as number 19 greatest artist of all time.
Yeah.
So I need to know, Amy, who's below...
Oh, no.
19.
Don't do this to yourself.
It's going to be Marvin Gaye is 18. Sorry. Oh no.
Other
sorry. Bo Diddley. Oh, we're going the other direction.
This is racist. Otis Redding 21.
Otis Redding.
You too.
You too. 22nd.
Not as good.
Bruce Springsteen is 23rd. Now none as prolific or as good as the Velvet Underground. Jerry Lee Lewis is 24. Fats Domino, 25. The Ramones, 26. It's also weird. Prince, 27. Well, I'm not a Prince fan, but
come
compared
on.
To the Velvet Underground, The Clash, 28.
The Ramones are better than The Clash? The no. Ramones are a fucking joke.
Listen, look. You have to... This is the problem. This is the problem with corruption in Rotten Tomatoes or the Oscars or whatever. We all have to sit around and pretend like the Ramones are a better band than The Who because right. The Ramones are 22 and The Who is 29.
Who?
And the problem with the corruption is we can't base it on cool points. We have to do it on product. Who has better product, the Ramones or The Who? And I like the Ramones, but there's no possible way.
There's just no comparison,
but the Ramones are a cool band to say you like, and the Velvet Underground is a cool band to say you like, so they must put it. It's my Tig Notaro conspiracy, which is she's not a particularly funny person, but you must say that you like Tig Notaro. Because then you get the cool points. Mm. So there's a comedic version of that. There's always been a band version of that. It's the cool kids deciding on what's cool, but not based on it's why we love sports. Like, I don't care how cool or uncool Bill Belichick is. He just wins. He just wins. And then thus, that's so why.
Right.
It's kind of the end of the meritocracy.
Right.
There's no meritocracy in the world that would have the Velvet Ramones. Underground or the Ramones ahead of The Who. And or you can keep going on that list and see some other bands or Prince or anyone to be outraged.
From 1 to 30, they should have to defend their choice and their placement.
Yes. I would like them... I would
Stevie
like
Wonder. Otis Redding is at 21. Dude died before his song came out.
That's right. That's what we ascertained. Johnny Cash,
31.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracle, 32. All well behind the Velvet Underground. The Everly Brothers.
Neil Young.
Michael Jackson.
I thought he was in top 10 for sure.
Madonna, for sure. 36. Roy Orbison. It's all John Lennon. It's all a slap in the face.
David Bowie's 39?
Didn't he discover Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground?
Wow.
Don't they have their career to him?
Simon Garfunkel,
and
40.
Fuck you, Simon and Garfunkel.
The Doors.
41.
They get it right sometimes.
It just keeps going. Van Morrison.
This is fantastic.
Yeah, speaking of the Doors, my son said Janis Joplin, Run DMC. My
Elton John, 49.
Oh, that's hurtful. That's hurtful.
All right. So we don't have to look at anything that Rolling Stone ever writes ever again and pay any attention to it. My son, who's trying to get into old music or whatever, he's always trying to figure stuff out. Like, you know, I was talking to him about the Hollies. The Hollies have a bunch of great songs. People don't really remember the Hollies, but
were they Long Cool Woman in a Black Dress?
Yeah, but
that's
they're
a fucking
also
song.
Also He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. You know, they had like a lot
of
range.
Dawson?
Yeah, Graham Nash. Yeah. That's true. Good call. And I said to him, he said, the Hollies. He said something with Buddy Holly? I said, yeah, they were named themselves after Buddy Holly.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then he was like, oh, when did Buddy Holly die? And I said, I don't know, 57? Well, it was 59, and then he's got his phone, and he's going, oh, okay. And then the Hollies came around in 62, and I'm trying to explain to him what the Hollies did and some of these other bands of yore. And then I said to him, he said, what about the Doors? What's with the Doors? Should I listen to the Doors?
The Doors?
I said, I never liked the Doors when I was young. Although Break On Through, I always thought of as like one of the first punk rock songs. I thought of that as a great kind of punk song.
I don't know if Gina had the same experience as me and seemingly everyone else in my life, but like by the time, well, you're much younger than me,
right.
But by the time I was like in high school, the Doors were like part of your classic rock starter pack.
Yes.
Like you had to have the greatest
hits. The movie put it over the edge.
And then you got past and found more interesting bands.
Tell him to watch the movie.
Yeah, I was like, the Doors, I don't know. But as I got older, I kind of appreciated them more because they're more interesting. You know, some of their songs like Crystal Ship and stuff like that, and The End and stuff like that, they're really interesting. I don't, you know, you don't sit around and pop your fingers
the soft
to it.
Parade.
Yeah, they're an interest, super interesting band.
I first heard of the Doors when I was 13 years old from the Dead Milkmen song "Bitchin' Camaro."
Oh wow!
Mm. And speaking of punk rock, and the Dead Milkmen or the Dead Kennedys or the Dead Somebodies, I have to issue a correction.
What have you done
on this show?
The Butthole Surfers.
That led us down a path. Ami Horowitz, who does all those videos that we talked about, Ami sent me a text that said, I heard the show the other day before we started getting into the Butthole Surfers. What about the Butthole Surfers and Detachable Penis? I read it as the Butthole Surfers wrote Detachable Penis. He meant, what about this other funny band with a funny name and then this crazy song?
Oh. Okay.
So then I led us down that path, but he wrote me later that I'd misinterpreted.
Thanks,
Adam. How are you going to give us that 45 minutes back, Adam?
I know, but it was exacerbated by Emmy taking to the internet, and the internet saying a lot of people think the Butthole Surfers. Anyway, so I wanted to be fair and balanced. All right, let me tell you about...
They're number 50 on Rolling Stone's list.
Zip Recruiter. So much to do during the summer. If you're a business owner, the last thing you want to do is sort through tons of unqualified candidates and their resumes. Well, you want to be barbecuing. You want to be sea kayaking. You want to be out in nature having fun, not looking through a stack of resumes. And that's why you need ZipRecruiter. They do the work for you. And now you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. ZipRecruiter uses powerful technology to find and match the right candidates with you and the job you need them to do. Easy to review these recommended candidates, and you can review it. They'll recommend them, and you can invite them to apply and make them your top choices to apply. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It's ZipRecruiter, right, Dawson?
Soak up all that summer has to offer and let ZipRecruiter do the work. Ready for the URL? It's ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. That's where you can try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/ADAM. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right. Dawson has an article about why you might want to think about getting an electric car again and what goes into that, and a vid that's kind of funny, too. And we'll, on the same note, we'll listen to that right after this. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything? GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at GEICO.com. Go there and get a rate quote, or contact a local agent.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
What's up, Corolla? You're the only person I ever heard mention this type of car. And the other day, you guys were talking about first cars that we ever had. And my first car was a 1987 Renault Alliance. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Renault Alliance.
The Renault.
That's not real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Renault is still very big into F1 racing, but no Renault. Renault,
I guess they pronounce it. Production cars?
Not here. No? I feel like maybe they're state-owned or state-whatevered in France, and they make cars and sell them there. But maybe it's like a Canadian radio station that's forced to play Bryan Adams.
Certain number of Canadian artists.
Because I don't think Renault can compete in sort of the open American market when we have a choice of 70 wonderful offerings from a varied automotive manufacturers, but maybe they could compete if the government subsidized them a little bit. All right. So, you know, people are starting to kind of wake up to the fact that, well, actually, Emmy, we can play that video that somebody tweeted me, which is electric cars are great. I would like to have an electric car. Gas is $7 a gallon here, and I get it. But they're starting to kind of wake up to the fact that nothing is just free.
No.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's not a panacea.
You get an electric car, you plug it in, you drive for free. And it's great for the environment because it doesn't do. It's like
where are we starting from?
It's like cable cord cutters. If you're going to pay one way or the other, it's a matter of, you know, what you want to have.
Yeah. Now, I said millions of years ago on Loveline, I just went, we just need a whole bunch of nuclear power plants and then electric cars. And we would charge the electric car from the power plant, from the nuclear power plant, and then the environment would be saved and it'd be win-win. But we tried to get rid of the nuclear power plants while simultaneously pushing the electric cars. I don't know about you guys, but we're heading into the summer. It's getting hot out there, and Daddy's getting himself a whole house generator because I can't take any more of these fucking rolling blackouts, which are sure to come hit SoCal, which is also simultaneously the epicenter of the electric vehicle push, except for there's nothing to put into the tank of the electric vehicle because our power grid is such a fucking mess. It's typical sort of political stuff, but this is funny. Someone tweeted me this. This is a woman. I don't know what town she's in. She's very proud. She's explaining that the new city hall or the new building has the first charging stations put in. And they're doing a ribbon cutting ceremony, and everyone's feeling very proud of themselves because they're now making the switch to electric. And we're going to clean the environment. And the plug on the electric sign is green, of course, because it's all green.
So what's charging the batteries right now? What's the source of
electricity? Well, here. It's coming from the building.
I mean, what's our mix of power?
Oh, actually, Lansing feeds the building.
What's that?
Lansing feeds power to the building. So I don't know.
They're,
I bet you they're a bit of coal. They're heavy on natural gas, aren't they?
Right now, the car is charging off of your grid.
Right. It would be charging off our grid, which is about 95% coal.
95% coal.
Michigan, I guess, yeah.
All right, so I know we're all patting ourselves on the back about the electric car, but 95% of the power for the electric car is coming from coal. So where are we at with the environment? And it's weird. We're very obsessed with what's coming out of the tailpipe all the time. Mm-hmm. We've cleaned up what's coming out of the tailpipe quite a bit, but I don't know what's coming out of the smokestack of the coal-powered facility that is charging all these cars. So it seems absurd to be so enthusiastic about the part B, but not the part A.
Right.
Part A is we need a lot of clean, renewable, abundant electricity to power the cars that we're all patting ourselves on the back on. But furthermore, no one really wants to think about it, but you want to power an electric car. You know, your car, your Subaru, my car, Brian's car, we have a battery. That battery is filled with some of the worst shit on the planet, taken from the ground in some of the worst places on the planet. But that battery is the size of a lunchbox and weighs about 13 pounds. An electric car, you got about 1,000 pounds worth of batteries. And the question is where's all that shit coming from?
Well, the good news with that, though, is once you bury the battery, it just biodegrades and becomes trees.
Well, that's the whole thing. Like, the people, I mean, I was talking to Bill Shatner about this, and I was like, hey, man, we got to get some nuclear power plants going. And he's like, well, what do we do with the isotopes when they're done with their run? And we're like, well, how do we dispose of them? It's like, how are you going to dispose of these millions and millions of batteries that are no longer good anymore? Yeah. But there's an article that Dawson has.
Is it ethical to purchase a lithium battery powered EV by Ronald Stein? With numerous state governors having issued executive orders to phase out the purchasing of gasoline-driven cars within the next decade or so, and the automobile manufacturers' efforts to phase into only manufacturing EVs, here's some food for thought about the lack of transparency about clean energy exploitations. In an oil well, 100% organic material is pumped out of the ground, taking up about 500 to 1,000 square feet. Then it flows in pipelines, safely transporting the oil to the refineries to be manufactured into usable oil derivatives that are the basis of more than 6,000 products for society and into transportation fuels needed by the world's heavyweight and long-range infrastructures of aviation, merchant ships, cruise ships, and militaries. Each lithium supply mine usually consists of 35 to 40 humongous 797 Caterpillar haul trucks, along with hundreds of other large equipment. Each 797 uses around 500,000 gallons of diesel each year.
I never even really thought about that part. Just to get it out of the ground, we got to use a fuck load of diesel.
You keep going back and back.
Everything is, every single piece of heavy equipment is diesel powered, and it's all got to be used. And if you've ever seen any of those monster trucks, have you ever seen those things where like the tire is 9 foot tall and they got to get a two-stage ladder to get up there? Like, they're massive and how much they burn, but all right.
So with an inventory of just 35, the haul trucks alone are using 17.5 million gallons of fuel a year for just one lithium site. There is virtually non-existing transparency of the environmental degradation and the human rights abuses occurring in developing countries with yellow, brown, and black-skinned people.
That's the other thing, too, which is, you know, you want to sink an oil rig, you make a hole in the ground, and you go straight down. You want to do a mine, you have to take out all the earth in a 20-mile circle, essentially, is creating these huge, I mean, literally tearing the earth apart.
And talking about human rights abuses, send some kids in there and see if it collapses.
Yeah, well, they're in places we don't really care about.
Both human rights abuses and environmental degradation are directly connected to the mining for exotic materials and metals that are required to manufacture wind turbines, solar panels, and EV batteries. Today, a typical EV battery weighs 1,000 pounds. Damn. It contains 25 pounds of lithium, 60 pounds of nickel, 44 pounds of manganese, and 30 pounds of cobalt, 200 pounds of copper, and 400 pounds of aluminum, steel, and plastic. Inside are over 6,000 individual lithium ion cells. It should concern you that all those toxic components come from mining. For instance, to manufacture each EV auto battery, you must process 25,000 pounds of brine for the lithium, 30,000 pounds of ore for the cobalt, 5,000 pounds of ore for the nickel, and 25,000 pounds of ore for copper. All told, you dig up 500,000 pounds of the Earth's crust for just one battery.
Oy.
The current fossil fuel infrastructure is less invasive than mining for the exotic materials and metals required to create the batteries needed to store green energy. In developing countries, these mining operations exploit child labor and are responsible for the most egregious human rights violations of vulnerable minority populations. These operations are also directly destroying the planet through environmental degradation. The 2022 Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, Clean Energy Exploitations, Helping Citizens Understand the Environmental and Humanity Abuses That Support Clean Energy, does an excellent job of discussing the lack of transparency to the world of the green movement's impact upon humanity.
I'm really just saying, we can't just go, hey, get an electric car, and then we save everything. Like, nothing, everything is attached to something else. There's this, and then there's that. You can't just make proclamations about, we're going to shut down the pipelines, and we're going to go green, and then everything's going to be great. Like, no, it's all attached to something. Nothing is free in nature. No. It's very nuanced, and you have to take into consideration many other factors other than I'm going to go to the Sprouts in Santa Monica. I'll just plug my car in and that'll be it. Yes.
Well, and it's like, we don't even have to think that far. You think about iPhones. We all have them. And like literally people jumping out of the building because the conditions are so bad. So they put a trapeze net on the bottom. Like, we're doing this all the time to ourselves.
I want to tell you that if I worked in one of those Chinese sweatshops with the guys I went to high school with, we definitely would have taken a shot at that net.
Oh, sure.
Like, we would have gone up to that roof and dared each other to just do a fall into
I'd
that
net. I'd be disappointed if you didn't.
Yeah, I would too.
The whole point is that it won't kill you.
I mean, we went to the Mulholland Club and jumped off the three-story roof into the swimming pool. That took 10 minutes for us to figure that one out. Sorry.
How many environmentalists are going to support lithium mines in America? There are two things needed to make
it. Well, that's a good point. None of them.
There are two things.
So then it's this weird intersection, which is the environmentalists are also the human rights people. I mean, it's the same group, you know. So you would never permit this in Indiana. No. So why in India? Mm. See what I did there?
That was nice. That was good. Close.
Yeah.
You'd never permit it in New Mexico. All right. Keep
Go
going.
On.
There are two things needed to make the EV technology work for the billions of lightweight cars. Get the mining practices for these exotic minerals and metals to the point where they are acceptable to the environmental movement, and stop the environmental degradation and human atrocities occurring in developing countries where people are being exploited with yellow, brown, and black skin. Further development of battery technology to somewhat clone how phones have been reduced in size with smaller and smaller batteries and increased capabilities in those small phones, and reduce the alarming tendency of lithium batteries and their charging sources from spontaneously catching fire without warning. So the next time you're thinking about purchasing an electric vehicle or driving your EV car, before congratulating yourselves on saving the environment, remember that it came at a cost of entire mountains in developing countries, thousands of square miles of land, and billions of gallons of oil and fuel.
You know what? I need this article for the next time I go out to eat with a vegan and the cunt starts talking about the cow. You know what it takes? For one cow, takes 7 acres of open grassland. You drove your fucking Prius here, didn't you, cunt?
Yeah, because I care about the earth.
Well, let me lay some fucking stats on your ass.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Can I just get another matcha tea, but no straw? Go ahead.
This will be the last Beyond Burger you enjoy, bitch.
Oh, no.
Let me lay some stats on you. All right. Sorry, Dawson. We got to the end.
We should all know that an electric vehicle battery does not make electricity. It only stores electricity produced somewhere, primarily by coal, uranium, natural gas-powered plants, and occasionally by intermittent breezes and sunshine. So to say an EV is a zero-emission vehicle is not at all valid, as 80% of the electricity generated to charge the batteries is from coal, natural gas, and nuclear. Since 20% of the electricity generated in the U.S. is from coal-fired plants, it follows that 20% of the EVs on the road are coal-powered. 40% of the electricity generated in the U.S. is from natural gas. It follows that 40% of the EVs on the road are natural gas-powered. 20% nuclear, so 20% nuclear-powered. Life without oil is not as simple as you think, as renewable energy is the only intermittent electricity from breezes and sunshine, as neither wind turbines nor solar panels can manufacture anything for society.
Well, there you go. So think about that. Yeah, it's kind of sad but true. If 20% of the power for your electric vehicle is coming from coal, then that's what's powering your vehicle, or 40% natural gas. And then by the time you get to nuclear, then everyone in Santa Monica is fucked, because 80% of what's powering their vehicle is one of the energy sources they hate.
Last paragraph here draws the conclusion that electric vehicle buyers should beware that they're buying blood diamonds.
Nice.
Stick with my
soup. I never thought I'd say this. Can we hear some Lou Reed? Some Velvet Underground?
All right. He had one.
Oh, no. I was joking.
All right. He had that I Love You, Diane song, which is horrible.
I know two Lou Reed songs. I know the two Lou Reed songs everybody else knows.
You don't have to add it was horrible.
You're right. It's a Lou Reed song. Yeah.
Walk on the Wild Side and Perfect Day.
Oh,
Sweet Jane. Wasn't that?
I always think of Cowboy Junkies.
He had a hit, a sort of poppy hit in the mid 80s called, maybe the early 90s, called I Love You, Diane, or Bud, I Love You, Diane, I think.
I got I Love You, Suzanne.
Oh, Suzanne.
By the early 90s?
Yeah.
He had a bit of a comeback.
Probably made. Cry. He said
I couldn't dance. Oh, this must have been Bowie producing it. To let you know that I can really make romance.
You do what you gotta do. You do everything you can. You do what you want.
He's such a hack. But I love
you, Suzanne. This sounds like late 80s Bowie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Modern Love and all that.
He's
not even trying to hit the note.
Actually, it might be.
What year is this, Emmy? Or Brian, or anybody with a computer? Or Gina?
1984.
Oh, there you go.
That song sucks.
It was, it got spins out here.
Can I palate cleanse? Because this is some bullshit. Yes.
Let's hear some Hollies.
Well, it's funny you should say, I was thinking about Buddy Holly when you're talking about it. And you might have to tell me, I don't know if this was a hit. I mean, I imagine it was a hit. I don't know if it was wildly popular because he didn't have that many songs. One of my favorite songs, and I think we played at the wedding, not just Buddy Holly songs, one of my favorite songs, and I think Ben has it, is Not Fade Away.
Oh, this Buddy.
Yeah.
This
is the Bo Diddley
song.
Beat.
Yeah, that's right. And the way it's produced is kind of haunting.
I'm
gonna tell you how it's gonna
be. The song was also remade a lot, I think.
I love this version.
Are the Stones in the version of this?
Yeah, they had a more raw sound to it.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of sexy, even though it doesn't seem like it would be.
Also, I was trying to explain to my son when he was talking about the plane crash, Buddy Holly, and who else was on the plane, like Richie
Valens.
And I was
Richie
like,
Valens.
Big Bopper. And he's like, who's the Big Bopper? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm the pilot.
Roger Peterson.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, Dawson would not.
I don't really
puck.
Know how to explain.
I played legendary Lubbock, Texas disc jockey High Pockets Duncan in the Santa Barbara City College production of Buddy.
What?
The Buddy Holly story.
Wow.
Had the first and last lines in the entire play.
And you would know this. Wasn't it Waylon Jennings who gave up a seat?
Yes.
Yeah.
And isn't the only Big Bopper song that anyone knows the Chantilly Lace and a Pretty Face?
What I like.
Yeah.
Hey, Emmy, did we ever... Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, Sean Weiss, who's going to come in here in a minute, you know him probably mainly as Greg Goldberg in the Mighty Ducks. He was the goalie, did all the movies. Very interesting, harrowing story. We'll get into that in a second. But his last film before the 14-year heroin odyssey is... Drill Bit Taylor from 2008.
Yeah.
And that is a, Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson, yeah.
Owen Wilson movie. And I don't know if you ever found that at the movies thing, but we didn't. Oh, we don't have that? Or, Emmy, do you have that or don't we have that?
We're looking for it right now.
Oh, you didn't look for it an hour and a half ago when I told you to look for it? No. I'm curious how that works. Okay.
Leslie Mann's
a lot
in this?
Of looking for it right now.
Is there a bit to this?
Well, you were gonna look for the At the Movies review of The Hammer that I told you about an hour and a half ago.
We're currently looking for it.
Right, but way back an hour and a half ago when I was on the phone with you, I said, "Hey, do we have it in our archives?"
I completely understand,
somewhere?
And I apologize. We're looking for it right now.
All right. Well, anyway, it just reminded me because my movie got reviewed with Drill Bit Taylor.
Oh, a bundle.
Was the week, and I'm trying to think of the other, kind of think of what the other movie was that it got reviewed with as well. But anyway, I heard Drill Bit Taylor. I hadn't heard Drill Bit Taylor in a million years, and it struck me. The only good thing about making an independent film is you don't get paid. You certainly never make any money. It's really a labor of love that where there's not enough love to go around. But on off chance that your movie could be reviewed at the movies, that was a crazy. I watched. Now, this is Richard Roper at the movies, but I used to watch At the Movies at my mom's house when it was on PBS or something.
It was syndicated. We watched it on Sunday after evenings, 4 or 5 o'clock, whenever it was on.
Yeah, it started out here on like KCT or something, wow. Or like the public channel.
Oh, did Huell ever talk to him?
No, I wish he'd been up on that balcony. I would have pushed his fat ass off it. Could have saved us a lot of time. So,
footnote, you guys ever see the Roger Ebert documentary, Life Itself?
No.
Yes, I think I did.
It's beautiful. It's the same guy who did Hoop Dreams, Steve James.
Oh, so it's got to
be magnificent. It's great.
All right. Let me tell you, while Emmy looks for that, about LifeLock. Higher property values have increased home title fraud. The fraudsters, well, they file a title transfer to do a bogus ID. And then they'll sell, refinance, take loans against the victim's property as well. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft affect our lives. Your personal info gets exposed so often. It's easy for a cybercriminal to steal your identity. Protecting your identity can be easy with LifeLock by Norton. LifeLock detects and alerts you to potential identity threats you may not spot on your own, like loans to take out in your name. If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code ADAM. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code ADAM for 25% off.
All right, Emmy, did you find that at the movies?
It's uploading right now.
Well, they do that. I should point out that Life Itself, the very good documentary about Roger Ebert, is streaming on Amazon Prime. If you are a Prime subscriber, mm-hmm. You can watch for free tonight.
Great.
It went all the way through his cancer. And
It showed lots of archival footage of early Siskel and Ebert. It was great.
Was he an early pioneer sort of mixed marriage guy?
Well, no, I wouldn't say early pioneer. They got married. I remember specifically because it was he gave a bad review to Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood movie. And when it came around that it was like not best picture and blah, blah, he kind of went back and said, you know what? I wasn't in a good headspace. I think I was just about to get married and I was like all up in my own head. It's actually a really good movie. So it's a long way of saying I think he got married to his African-American wife in 1994 early 90s-ish.
Right. So you're blaming her for the bad review?
I didn't do anything.
All right.
And they got, sorry, this is a fascinating thing. They got a sound alike to voice narrate the documentary.
That's good.
The whole time I was like, because Ebert's laid down thousands of hours of footage on TV. Like, did they get some sort of AI to like make him, you know, his voice, recreate his voice? No, it's an absolute sound alike.
You could take someone's audio, you know, you could.
Well, they
take
could do that for you by now.
Condoleezza Rice's audio book and cobble it together to make her say, "I like being cornholed."
Well, that's the problem.
It'll sound a little choppy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's. At the movies, Drillbit Taylor's up on the up on the poster, and they're up on the balcony. And is this A.O. Smith or A.I. F.U. or F.I.S.
H.R. Puffin Smith?
I can't think of the reviewer who's next to Roper.
I think
but
it is. Well, let's
A.O.
See
something. All right, sorry. Here we go.
Quite work on it.
Yeah, elements of movies like Some Kind of Wonderful.
Yeah,
20
exactly.
Years ago.
So not quite. Yeah,
disappointment.
I agree. Unexpectedly, though, this next film better than Drillbit Taylor. You know what I wasn't expecting from Adam
Carolla?
Yeah,
take that.
Did you put that on the poster?
Sidekick from The Man Show and recent contestant on Dancing with the Stars. I wasn't expecting a warm-hearted romantic comedy. In The Hammer, Carolla plays an L.A. carpenter who's just turned 40 and just been dumped by his girlfriend.
Take that,
Sean
Weiss.
Years ago, Jerry was a promising
better
amateur
than Drillbit Taylor.
These days, he's coaching part-time at his local gym, sparring with an Olympic hopeful. One day, Jerry lands the knockout punch and ends up getting his own shot at the Olympic regionals.
I'm taking a look at some prospects for the Olympic trials.
Nah.
Hold on, coach, man. You want to give a 40-year-old black guy a shot?
Yeah, coach, when is the black man finally going to get a fair shake in the fight game?
Here at a party thrown by co-worker Ozzy Castillo, Ozzy's fellow Nicaraguan nationalists are skeptical about Jerry's chances.
Nicaragua, numero uno. Nicaragua!
You guys sure seem to love Nicaragua, except for the part where you risk your lives not to live there anymore.
All right, for one round, then you're going to bed.
Now, without making a big deal about it, The Hammer takes place in a truly multicultural L.A. One of Jerry's pupils is a public defender, played by Heather Jurgensen. She's from the film Kissing Jessica Stein.
Don't take too many shots to the face.
Oh, that's inspirational. How about a little something like, I believe in you, Jerry?
Oh, right. I believe in you, Jerry.
How can I lose?
I don't want to oversell The Hammer, and ethnic gags are fresher than others, but Carolla and Jurgensen are easy company. I was expecting one sort of movie, and I got another, a sweet little L.A. story. It's in limited theatrical release right now, and I will tell you when it comes out on DVD. I say see it, unexpectedly, but see it.
You know what, Michael? I say see it as well. Like Adam Carolla. He has a certain... Hey, Michael.
Yes.
And I like him. I like
it
the character.
It worked for Bill Murray, you know?
And, it's funny, because this has actually got elements of Stripes meets Rocky, I think, in a way.
That's nice.
It reminded me of Artie Lang's Beer League and Jeff Garland's I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. Small film.
Oh, just stop a couple
likeable
seconds ago.
Guys who are very funny, playing versions of themselves and doing a really good job of it, and a nice little script, a better script than I expected, a better story, better supporting cast than I expected as well. I like this film quite a bit.
I think if a lot of his fans who sort of know him from The Man Show are going to go in expecting one thing, they should probably just get adjusted right now for something that's actually much more of a date movie.
Very funny, and you know what?
And a nice feeling for L.A.
In all the cases I mentioned to Michael, these guys are smart enough to stay.
Now, how do you feel?
Better than Drill Bit Taylor.
That's the takeaway. How do you feel about everyone going, it's better than this?
A lot of high voices.
It lets you know what they thought of you going in.
Indeed.
It wasn't a total disaster.
There's a lot of that in my life. Hey, nice guy.
Who knew?
All right. Sean Weiss is going to come in, and Natanya Ross is going to come in, both actors that you recognize as very famous childhood actors, and now taking a different turn in life, and we'll talk about that right after this.